Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is Joe Beninati. You're listening to NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face Off podcast. Here's your host, J.J. Regan.
Thank you, Joe. Welcome into another edition of NBC Sports Washington's Capitals Face-Off Podcast. I'm, of course, your host, the Capitals correspondent, J.J. Regan, with me today. He is the first mate to my captain. He is the Capitals insider, Tarik El-Bashir. Tarik?
That was quite possibly the lamest.
You say that intro. So much, it's lost but all meaning.
Well, so of your interest. I mean, that one right there sank to a new low. But you know what? I can't even get mad, dude. I can't get mad.
Who could be
the
mad
Capitals
right now?
The Capitals are 2-0. They're headed for the Stanley Cup Finals. I'm starting to think about that dream I had about John Walton and the parade route and the float. All right, maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But
a little bit.
I'll tell you this. I feel good. So the Caps look good.
What we will talk about today, we are, of course, going to dive into how the Caps look after two games where they took not one, but two in Tampa, the stunning the hockey world outside of the DMV area. So, Tarik, I think a lot of people here were pretty confident after beating the Penguins. I was struck when I was listening to podcasts and reading previews across the hockey community. I knew Tampa would be favored. I was struck by how many people were saying Tampa in five and giving the Capitals essentially no chance. How did the Capitals come out and stun Tampa with, I think you could call the first one a blowout, not one but two blowout wins in Tampa?
People are dumb. People like me and you who are pundits, in air quotes, and experts, we still can't predict the future with any certainty or accuracy. We're like weathermen of the sports. I mean, we look at the numbers, we look at past history, we look at how teams are playing, but until the game is played on the ice and the teams are facing one another, you really don't know how it's going to go. I mean, if you actually knew what was going to happen, people would win their NCAA pools all the time. You would win, you know, your hockey pool. There's too many factors and too many variables, and hockey is the most random of the pro sports tournaments. So I was surprised, like you were, that literally everyone was picking the Lightning, except for Tom Gulliddy. I think
Tom Gulliddy and
myself were the only people who picked.
Well, first of all,
for the record,
the Capitals.
Okay, but that's because I browbeat you into doing
that.
But for the record, I picked them in seven. So
okay,
but now I'm revising to pick them in
now,
four.
Now we're going to go back and now – Tarik, if the Capitals win the series, I'm going to play my prediction at the top of the next episode. When I said the Capitals would be up three games to one.
You said after, six games.
I said seven. Because they would be up 3-1 after four. I thought they were going to punch him in the mouth in game one.
Yep.
I didn't know they would punch him in the mouth again in game two. But, boy, have they looked good so far. And in full disclosure, Tom Gulliddy, the way he picks teams now, he figures out who he thinks is going to win, and then he picks the opposite because he's been so bad over the years. Okay, so we were surprised that everyone was giving the Capitals no shot. But still on paper, Tampa definitely looked like the better team. The Capitals have
marginally
dominated them so far. They have.
And I think there's a number of things happening here. I think, number one, this Capitals team was going to be a beast unleashed once they finally got by the Penguins.
Yes.
I mean, I've told anyone who would listen to me, and it's kind of silly to say this, but if the Capitals had somehow stumbled past the Penguins in Game 7 last year, they didn't play nearly well enough. I mean, they were awful in that game. But they had somehow managed to get a lucky goal or have something happen, and they got past the Penguins. They would have won the Stanley Cup last year, too.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the stumbling block, the hurdle, the bugaboo that they had to get passed. And once they got passed, I've always felt like they were going to take their game to another level collectively. But it's also a number of other things. I mean, I've said this before on this podcast. When you talk about Stanley Cup winners, they all have one trait in common for the most part. It's a goaltender that's on fire, and it's special teams. Either the penalty kill or the power play or both is better than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, the Caps power play scores almost at will. And Braden Holtby is playing out of his mind for the most part.
Very quietly playing out of his mind. The way the offense has played the last few games.
But it's not just the offense. It's that 1-1-3.
Yes.
It's that trap they're playing. It's completely flummoxed like the Lightning. They have no idea how to get around it. You got to tip your hat to the coaching staff, too. I mean, they've made the right adjustments. I mean, Coach Barry Trotz, I know he's had his his detractors through the years, and rightfully so, having never got past the second round with either Nashville or Washington. But he's pushing the right buttons right now. He's getting the job done without Nicholas Backstrom in the lineup, you know, changing up the way they changing up the system. You know, getting Lars Eller to produce the way he's producing. I mean, a lot of that's Lars himself too, but he's just doing all the right things at the right times. You know, I go back to the goaltending decision at the start of the playoffs. He made the right decision at the time,
yes.
But he also was gutsy enough to go, "Oh crap, I screwed up. Let's change."
Right.
And he changed right away. I mean, when it was apparent that he had made the wrong decision, there was no, you know, conservative trots thinking about it and maybe giving it another game. He pulled the plug, and it was, and there was no looking back.
The only glimpse we saw of the old trots was. It was clear the DSP move to the top line wasn't working in that one game, and it lasted the whole game, and he started the next game with it, and you wanted to pull your hair out. But he did, to his credit, he did change things up in game five. In the middle of game five, he switched it up. But that's the only – because you're right. The old criticism of Trotz has been he's not adjusting in the playoffs. He makes his decision. He sticks with it.
Yep.
And he doesn't adjust. And the playoffs are all about adjusting.
Yep, and they're adjusting. And you know, just as importantly as the adjustments that are being made, just everyone is contributing. I mean, there are no passengers. Remember last year, I mean, it was the top guys and that was it.
Yep.
This year, everyone is chipping in. Fourth liners are scoring goals. Third pair defensemen are making big hits that are changing the course of games. I mean, there's something happening with every player on this team. They're all active. They're all contributing. They're all chipping in.
You can't circle a player in the lineup and say, "What's that guy doing? Where has he been?"
Right.
Everyone has had a hand in how they played so far.
I will tell you this. Over the past 48 hours, I've received give or take 50 text messages from friends, buddies, former colleagues, people in the hockey world. And the common theme is WTF? ?
I mean,
no one has any idea what is going on right now.
For sure. There's definitely that sense of who is this team?
Yeah.
Where have they come from?
I got that text message last night. Who is this team?
Let's get to Backstrom. Game six against Pittsburgh. Backstrom is out. Three of your top six forwards are out. So you play a very heavily defensive game, and we saw the 1-1-3. Wasn't the first time they've used that in the playoffs, but it was the first time where I think they sort of built their entire game plan around that and committed to it for the full 60 minutes. So, Tarik, I ask you this. Against a team like Tampa Bay, if Backstrom were in the lineup, I don't know if that would have been the plan coming in. Did Backstrom's injury
force
Trotz into making a decision that actually benefited them against Tampa Bay?
I'm not going to say that was the sole deciding factor. It may have been a contributing factor.
But do you think they would have committed to defense the way they have in this series?
I think you were already seeing that. You were already starting to see this
yes,
team
you were.
Just play
Absolutely.
Better in its own end. The one thing that's really jumped out to me is the block shots, man. And they don't like talking about it for some reason. I don't know if that's a superstition or if they don't want to just make a big deal out of it. But this is a team that in the middle of the regular season was middle of the pack in block shots. Now they're blocking more than anyone else in the playoffs.
Yes,
Alex Ovechkin yesterday went out to guard Victor Hedman at the blue line. He stuck his leg out like a soccer player and took a shot right off the inside of his ankle.
Ovechkin is consciously blocking shots.
I remember, and I love Alex. I think he's the greatest player I've ever covered. I like him as a dude. I like him as a player. I really admire him. There were times early on in his career where he would have gotten out of the way of a puck. Now he's putting himself in. And when your captain, when your best player is making plays like that in the first period, putting his foot in the way of a Victor Hedman slap shot, that has to have an effect on the rest of the bench. The rest of the bench has to look around and go, all right, all right, all right. We see you, Alex.
I mean,
I'll raise you one.
There was also a power play that Tampa had. Jay Beagle was almost one of my three stars because in one of the penalty kills, he blocked not one but two shots on the same shift. He just completely ended the power play by himself on that shift.
Yeah.
So the team is totally buying in. All right, now let's move on to the stupid conversation about Nicklas Backstrom.
I don't even want to hear this. He's ready to go, he plays.
The Capitals are 3-0.
When he's ready to go, he plays. When he's ready to go, he plays.
Without Backstrom. Well, that's a third discussion, actually. Okay. But the
I'm just cutting you off.
The stupid discussion is 3-0 without Backstrom this offseason. Does he become expendable?
No.
No. Okay. That's pretty much all the analysis you need there.
No.
He's one of the best players on this team.
And look at his cap hit. I mean, look at his cap hit. I mean,
I know. He's cheap.
He's relatively. Relatively.
It's ridiculous.
No. If he wants to be here, he's here. If he wants to go elsewhere, then maybe. But if he wants to be here, he stays.
Right.
And I can tell you this. All of those wounds and those hurt feelings and the guys sniping at each other a little bit at the end of last season, the beginning of the season, that's all gone. It's all gone. I mean, do you remember the hug that Ovechkin and Backstrom shared after eliminating the Penguins?
Yes.
I mean,
right.
these guys couldn't be any tighter right now.
Absolutely.
And that's what you need. I mean, I've said this a million times, and I'll say it again. Chemistry is a funny, wacky thing in sports. You can mention it. You can say, I think this team has – you can look for it. But when a team has it, it's so obvious. It just jumps off the page at you because you're like, everyone is on the same page. Everyone's pulling on the rope in the same direction.
Yep.
And that's what you got right now. I mean, it's a cliche, but I mean, when you have that lightning in a bottle, and I think they've got it here. I mean, you just got to – did you like that? Lightning in a bottle. Did you like that? I honestly,
it was definitely not intentional. You just
no. I was sitting.
Not give you credit.
I was sitting on my Southwest flight in a middle seat, thinking of all the stupid lightning puns I could come up with. Anyway, they've got something special right now, and they're not getting any younger right now. And that proverbial window, it's still closing. And this has got to be it. This has to be the year.
I felt like.
In recent weeks that this could be the year, and now they've got to finish the deal.
I have to wonder how much that's contributing. The fact that, Brian McClellan said he made his famous 2-year window.
Apparently it was 3.
But I wonder if they're looking at this year and realizing, ooh, this may be it. And I wonder how much that has propelled them thus far. The third thing about Backstrom is, of course, when he will return from injury. I think my opinion, and you and I talked about this before the podcast, there's no reason to even consider putting him back in a lineup until you lose a game, right?
I might not play him until you're facing elimination. I mean, honestly, if you get through this series in five or six games, and let's be honest, we're not you never want to get ahead of yourselves.
No.
But history says 39 of 41 teams in this round, after going up 2-0, have gone on to win the series. So you can start to kind of – it's not crazy talk to discuss advancing.
Right.
I don't play them until next round.
When this series starts, you come in with the mindset of all in for winning this series. We're not even looking ahead. Now that you're up 2-0, it would be irresponsible for the coaches to not at least prepare it. The players need to think about one game at a time, but the coaches have to think ahead and think, okay, we may have another series to win here. I'm not putting Backstrom in until you at least lose a game. And even then, I'm still going to think about it because you play pretty well without him so far. If you can get by this series, if you can get out of this series.
Lars Eller?
He's played great. If you can get through the series without playing Backstrom, you do it. Absolutely. What a boon for this team if they can do that, because what a confidence boost that would be in the next round when you do get him back. I think that would be hugely beneficial for this team.
A boon?
Yeah.
Okay.
You like that?
I'll take it.
Wordsmith over here, Tarek. We're going to talk more about this series, but first we got to pay the bills. Welcome back. All right, Tarek. So game one and game two went about as well as you could possibly hope for the Capitals. How do they keep this going in game three and game four, considering they have been better on the road in this postseason than they have been at home?
They somehow got to mentally trick themselves into believing Capital One Arena is a road venue. Coach needs to put them in a hotel and bus them to the arena and give them, you know, road food. And I don't know, change the signage on the building. I don't know.
They should sell it. Oh, we're going to do a whiteout.
Right.
We're going to do a whiteout. And it's all for the Capitals. Well, you know, actually, it'll just make it look like Tampa.
Maybe instead of blocking zip codes from other cities being able to buy tickets,
you just let them all come in.
You bust them in. You bring in Lightning fans. I don't know. I mean, all seriousness, I don't know, man. It just the way this team has played on the road, 7-1 on the road this postseason?
Yes.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. I talked to Lars Eller about it last night. I asked him the question, and he said, we just have to play. We've learned something in this series, in these playoffs, as to how to perform on the road. We have to just translate that to the home ice. And, you know, they all bring up the same thing, which is when you're at home, the expectations are higher. You're a little more prone to overpassing and trying to make the fancy play because, you know, your fans are in the building and they paid money to come see you, you know, put on a show. And instead of just playing a simple game.
I don't care about that anymore. I think that is out the window.
That's what Lars was saying. So he said that what we have to do is simplify.
Yeah.
And just not look for that extra pass on the power play and just play a very simplified road-like game on home ice. Look, JJ, I don't know how this Lightning team is going to come out in game 3, what they're going to look like, what their attitude's going to be like, whether they're just going to roll over and get steamrolled, or whether they're going to come out like angry hornets. I have a bad feel for this team. I think the people who cover the Lightning have a bad feel for this team at this point.
Yeah,
but I can tell you this: they're frustrated, they're flummoxed, they're flailing, they're just in a bad spot right now. I mean, Nikita Kucherov was kicking Brett Connolly. Chris Kunitz was running around like a crazy person that's probably the only way you can put it for a family podcast at the end of that game. So not only are they getting beaten, they're also starting to fall apart at the seams. They're starting to disintegrate a little bit. So if the Capitals can come out and get an early goal, you know, get that rock the red crowd just, you know, at a deafening decibel level, I think they might fold up. And if they fold up in game 3, it's over. It's lights out.
Yeah.
This might be a sweep.
If they lose game 3, that's an obvious statement. If they lose game 3, this could be a sweep. Yeah. But, you know, one thing that has been discounted so far, and with good reason, the home crowd has always had that sense of impending doom in Washington. You've heard
how. I feel like they've gotten over it a little bit.
See, you cut me off and then you make my point for me.
Okay.
They've always had that sense of impending doom. And whenever things go badly, the air gets sucked right out of the building. I think that's gone now. I think, like the Capitals team that got over the hump, I think the crowd has gotten over that hump too. You're going to see a different crowd come game 3, because this is a Capitals team that beat the Penguins, is in the conference championship round, and has a 2-0 lead. I think they're going to be crazy.
So I just walked through the Tampa airport, got on my Southwest flight, and then landed in Reagan Airport and walked to my car and drove straight to Kettler Capitals Iceplex to record this podcast. I don't remember exactly how many high fives I got from complete strangers, but it was probably around 10. These are folks in Capitals gear, folks in business attire. Everyone is losing their minds over this run. A 50-year-old lady in like seat 16 just leans over from the middle and goes, "Go Caps!" and, you know, gave me a big high five. I mean, people are starting to really believe here, and I think that crowd on Tuesday night is going to be lit. It is going to be insane. I think Thursday is going to be even if they're up 3-0. I have been in that building in many, many playoff games, and I'm not sure it's been as loud since. I'm trying to think of the loudest series. There are times where, do you remember the Rangers series when Boudreau made a comment about the Rangers fans?
Yeah, and so they chanted, "Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?" And then the Rangers,
Washington fans chanted, "We are louder.
We are louder." Yes. When they started chanting, "We are louder," that was the first time in my life, and I've been to concerts. I've stood on the start finish line of a drag strip. That might have been the loudest, the highest decibel level I have ever, ever heard. And I think you're going to experience something like that because of where this team is. I mean, they're on the verge of kind of history for this franchise. And I think the fans are going to scream their heads off accordingly.
Absolutely. So how can this let's look at it, because the other team is, they've got coaches, they got players, they're paid too. How do they overcome the Caps? So far, they haven't been able to beat that trap at all. For me, I don't want to say, well, if the Capitals continue to play their game, because that's a cliche that is disguised as analysis. That's not really analysis. Tampa Bay has to figure out the way to beat the trap. I think the most obvious answer is the Capitals need to stay out of the box, because Tampa Bay has still had success on their power play in this series. Tarik, how does Tampa turn this around?
Well, number one, Vasilevskiy has to find his game. He hasn't been good.
He hasn't been great.
I don't think he's been good. That goal by Kuznetsov from the goal line, the power, that was a backbreaker.
Yeah,
that you was, can't let that puck right. go into the net.
Yeah.
He got pulled in game one. He has not been good.
Yeah. I don't think he's why they've lost both games, though.
Oh, I don't think so either, but he ain't helping them. He ain't helping them right now, and he's going to have to get a lot better.
But your backup is Domingue.
Yeah, get out.
Vasilevskiy is your guy.
Yeah. Oh, he absolutely is. But yeah. You're asking me how the Lightning turn this around.
Yeah,
they're gonna need the type of performance that can single-handedly win a game for his team and then frustrate the other team, because he makes 42 saves, you know, including, you know, six from point blank range.
Yep.
That's one way they can do it. But you know, getting around that trap, you know, dumping and chasing and actually winning the puck once you've dumped it, that could help. It hasn't worked yet. I would say they've got a great power play, just like the Capitals do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, they struck twice on it. Those calls were awful. that's not what we're here to talk about. But we saw the power of that unit. It's good.
Lethal.
Yeah. Steven Stamkos is going down onto one knee, right-handed shot from the right circle. That's great. That's a great shot. So I agree with you on, you know, staying disciplined. The Capitals have struggled with that throughout the year.
Yeah.
Regular season and playoffs.
Yep.
Tom Wilson's played outstanding, I think, but he still takes too many penalties.
Yep.
A few others as well. So I think the Lightning are in trouble, man. I think they're in trouble. I think short of Andre Vasilevskiy turning into Yaroslav Halak. they might be in big trouble.
I think, I'm searching for ways, because Tampa's so good, but I'm searching for ways that they can just beat the Capitals the way both teams are playing right now. It may just be those two factors, goaltending and special teams. The one thing,
I mean, 5-on-5, they've been woefully outplayed by the Capitals.
The thing that has been surprising to me, and everyone assumed that Tampa had better depth on defense. The Capitals have exposed that defense. That defense is not looking
good. You know who's slow? Dan Girardi.
Yes.
You know who's even slower? Ryan McDonagh.
Girardi was run out of town in New York, and no one knows how bad he was because they paired him with Victor Hedman, who happens to be one of the best defensemen in the entire world, and so they've gotten by on that. Not this series.
You know who exposed. You know who I would take on my team any day of the week and twice on Sunday? Victor Hedman. Holy shit.
He's phenomenal.
Oh, my good God.
He's phenomenal.
That dude's ridiculous.
But his partner is Dan Girardi.
It's hurting.
That hurts.
He's another guy who looked like he was getting frustrated. He was getting frustrated with himself, with his teammates. You could tell. They zoomed in on him a couple times on TV. He's starting to he's on the verge of cracking, too. But, man, that guy's a player. Oh, my God, he's a player.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how both teams come out in Game 3. The Capitals, I want to see Killer Instinct. I want to see them keep the pedal to the metal, because Tampa's playing for their lives in Game 3. They are not going to beat the Capitals 4 straight games. They have to win Game 3 or the series is over.
They did beat the Capitals 4 straight games in the playoffs.
Yes, they did. Well, I did tweet about that this morning. The last time the Capitals took a 2-0 lead on the road was actually against Tampa Bay. And they ended up losing that series 4-2.
Yeah, something weird happened. I don't remember what it was, but they ended up playing back-to-back games down in Tampa, and they lost both, and weirdness ensued.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't see that happening again. This is a different Capitals team. Their mentality, they just look unlike anything I have seen from this franchise since I began covering them in 2004. I think they just need to keep playing the way they did in Tampa, and hopefully get past these guys as quickly as possible, lick their wounds, get Nicholas Backstrom in the lineup, and get ready for maybe a championship run.
Yeah, I think if the Capitals win even just one at home, if especially if that one game is game three, I think the series is over. But we will have to wait and see. That's why the games are played on the ice, Tarek. And we've got more bills to pay, so we will be right back after a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Tarek, we've got time for a few questions here.
All right.
First from Matthew Rexrod.
What's up, Matthew?
If a defender takes a penalty, the PK unit will likely be two forwards and two defenders. If they kill off that penalty and the D comes back onto the ice and can't head to the bench, what is their responsibility positionally?
That's a great question. I mean, and it happens. It happened.
It does happen.
It happened last game. Matt Niskanen came out of the box, and
one.
He actually went. Yeah, he actually went for a stretch pass,
and he went to that. It almost turned.
It almost worked, right?
Well, no, he cut to the inside. The shot was blocked,
yeah.
And they passed to Nikita Kucherov for the breakaway.
Right. Look, you ideally don't want your D man coming out of the box and then playing forward,
right?
But if for some reason the play, he steps out of the box and the play is on his side of the ice, these guys are all hockey players. I mean, they'll be able to figure out. I mean, Niskanen knows what a left wing does in that situation, and we'll make a play, and then we'll go make a change.
Yes.
I mean, you don't want to play an entire shift with three D-men on the ice.
No.
But if you've got to make a quick play to keep the other team from advancing, you just play wing for a second.
You play wing. Your responsibility in that situation is to,
and also
don't mess anything up before you get to the bench, and then to the bench.
It also comes, it's communication. It's first of all, I mean, you will notice that depending on what's going on, players make eye contact with the bench.
Mm-hmm.
It's, hey, are you coming straight over, or you want me to go in? Obviously, players are aware of what's going on, but let's say you're Tom Wilson and you're in the box, and when you come out, maybe they want you to go. They want you to go out because you got fresh legs. Maybe you can go the other way and look for a stretch pass. Maybe they want you to go on the zone because they've been hemmed in there a little bit, and the guys are tired, and you have fresh legs. You can go in and get that puck out. That's a good question, but I don't think it's it would become an issue.
Yeah, it's not something set in stone. It's not like something that they practice. It's just, you know, talk to the players out there and don't screw anything up. Thank you for your question. Next is Josh Magnus, who writes.
Hey, Josh.
How badly will Tom Wilson's suspension affect his game? It's obvious he has to play a different standard. He's constantly penalized for his reputation and now gets suspended for being bigger and stronger than other players. He will no doubt be holding back on those hits.
I think you're going to see him change a little bit. I think you're going to see him dial it back a little bit.
Yeah.
I think he is going to think twice before making a hit at 25 miles an hour that would be over the line. I think some of the unnecessary contact, you're going to see him avoid those hits. You're going to see him pull up a little bit more. I think as he finds that line, he'll get a little more comfortable. I think you're going to see him swing probably wildly to one side, to the conservative side, and you're going to see him kind of slowly come back. We've already seen that with him once, right? We saw that at the start of this year when he came back from that 4-game suspension.
Yep.
He came out and was pretty docile for the first little while and then kind of ramped it back up as he got more comfortable as to where that line was and what he could and could not get away with. The one thing I'll tell you is Tom Wilson's one of the smarter guys I've dealt with. He understands. He studies the game. He's watched a lot of video. He's got a pretty good feel for where that line is. Sometimes he crosses it intentionally, but he knows where that line is.
He has studied it this season.
Look, man,
a lot.
He made 250 hits in the regular season. That's the fourth most of any player in the league. And that's you know, tracked by the league hits. He probably made more than that.
Yeah.
Didn't take a single suspension during the regular season. Remember, the 4-game was for something happened in the preseason. So if you can make the fourth most hits and not have a suspension, he's got pretty good trust in his own judgment.
Yeah.
And I know he always says he is going to change his game a little bit. He has to.
Yeah.
Because it hurts the team when he's out of the lineup. It hurts his team when he's in the penalty box. Remember, he's still young, 24, 25. I mean, he's still a very young player, even though he's played so many games because he came into the lineup, you know, at 18 years old.
Yep.
I think you're going to see him dial it back a bit, but I don't think he's going to become, you know, a big softy.
Yeah.
At all. I mean, I don't know if you watched game two, but he was running guys over and talking smack at the other team's bench and in everyone's face.
Right.
And it, actually, one of my favorite moments of the game. And, you know, as much as he's one of my favorite players. I love watching the guy. He's just a fun guy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
There was some foolishness going on along the boards. And I don't remember what the two players were, but they were kind of the play was whistled dead and the two guys were kind of grabbing each other. And a couple of Lightning players kind of came over to see it, you know, to get a little closer. And Wilson, like a bodyguard, like literally like a bouncer, just skated over to the scrum and just kind of put his hand up like, no, no. And both Lightning players put their heads down and just kind of skated off in different directions. I mean, that's the kind of deterrent he is. I mean, yeah. When a 6'4", 230-pound man who can kick your ass comes over and goes, no, boys, you just turn around.
Right.
You need that. I don't want that to go away. He just needs to avoid the stuff that he's able to avoid.
Yes. And we've talked a lot about how his reputation hurts him.
It does.
With the refs, and it absolutely does. But it also benefits him somewhat in this series in that he doesn't need to make that big thunderous hit against Tampa Bay for them to know who he is, for them to worry about him, for them to say, all right, we're on the ice. Where's Tom Wilson? I got to know where Tom Wilson is. You know, we already saw they know about Tom Wilson and they want to get in his head. Chris Kunitz tried to tear his head off in game one when he ripped his helmet off.
That guy makes me angry.
Tom Wilson hasn't done anything yet and he's still agitated the hell out of Tampa Bay. In some ways, his reputation can help him there. And then in other ways, he can get hooked into a goaltender and get a 2-minute penalty for no reason.
Well, yeah. He probably could have – that was a little bit of the accidental on purpose.
Yeah.
I don't know. He probably could have done it. If that were Braden Holtby and he was getting hooked, you know, coming back on the back check, he would have avoided his own goaltender.
That's a fair point.
He would have gotten out of the way of Braden Holtby.
That's a fair point. Fair point. The hook was definitely there.
He definitely clearly got hooked.
It wasn't yanking him to the point where like,
it was a Patrick Hornquist penalty.
He couldn't avoid it. Yeah.
Sorry. My bad. Didn't see you there.
Accidentally on purpose, probably a good way to put it. Thank you guys for your questions. If you want to have your question read and answered on the next podcast, you can send it in to capitalsfaceoff@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe anywhere podcasts are available and be sure to give us a good rating and review. Those things really do matter to help spread the word about the show. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. You will hear from us again after Game 4, which, Tart, we could be talking about the end of the series at Game 4.
Please.
After Game 4.
Please, for a guy who's been on the road for the better part of a month.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't be bad to have a couple of days off before the craziness really begins. But look.
That seemed unfathomable when the series started. At the same time,
let's tap the brakes here.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
The Caps are halfway there. They're halfway to being halfway. You know what I mean?
Yep. The Capitals were in this exact same position. It could be 2-2 heading back to Tampa, and then it will be quite the different story. But for right now, things are happy in Washington. Capitals are up 2-0, and everything is coming up Milhouse.
you know what I'm grappling with right now as we're talking?
What's that?
So the office just booked my hotel for game 5.
Oh, and you definitely want to go
now,
to Tampa.
And
you?
Now, well, no, I'm fine. The text messages are going back and forth right now. They're going, should we book our flights for game 5 or wait to see what happens in game 3? They're going to get more expensive. Carlin's like, I'm gonna book mine now. They're going, hang on a second. So that's what I'm dealing with at the moment. But it's better than the alternative, which is breakdown day or, you know.
Oh, yes.
Or writing about who's going to be leaving the team because the team, you know, got bounced in the second round.
It makes our summer a little bit shorter.
This is so much more fun.
This is way more fun than covering another sad, dejected team going, I don't know what happened.
I already told you. I've already given you guys my prediction for what's going to happen this year. Plan the damn parade route.
Three minutes ago, let's tap the brakes. And now you're saying plan
the parade.
Are you saying
I contradicted myself in the span of 90 seconds? I never do that.
Oh, thanks as always for tuning in. We'll see where we are after game 4. But for now, let's get the puck out of here.